welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, January 7th of 2013, and you are listening to episode 32. My name is Rob. With me here today is my good friend Jason. How's it going, Jason?
It's going pretty good. I'm deafened.
You're deafened?
Deafened.
Yeah. Do I have the levels up too high?
Or no, I'm deafened by that amazingly awesome new intro.
Oh, indeed. Yeah, that was catchy, wasn't it?
It was blaring so loud in my headphones.
Was it?
It was.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. I'll have to turn that down.
I'm kidding. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Hope the listeners like it, too.
Yeah. Yeah, our new exciting new theme song opening jingle there. I hope you all enjoy that. It was super fun to put together. Many thanks to DJ Dr. Rock for throwing that sweet cut together for us.
DJ Dr. Rock, he's been around the block.
Yeah, well, he's a doctor of rocking, so you know he had to learn his experience in rock somehow.
I believe that. Yeah, you know,
a career in rock doesn't come easy.
Why is it we always work with the weirdest musicians when we have to get music for stuff?
I don't know. But Dr. Rock has done some sweet music for us once before in the past for a different project.
He did.
Yeah. He did, indeed. Yeah. So there you go. Happy New Year, Jason.
Happy New Year, Rob.
Yeah, this is our first episode of 2013. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I feel like the possibilities are just boundless.
Mind-boggling. Yeah. This is our first show that we've recorded since Christmas happened. So did you get any games for Christmas?
I did not, actually.
Not one?
No, I didn't this year. Normally I do, but this year I didn't. It's probably because my wife knows I bought so many games at Gen Con. Oh, yeah. No, you know what I did get that was pretty awesome, though?
What's that?
A weather station.
Like one of those like automated things?
Yeah, it's got like an anemometer on it and a barometer and stuff, mm-hmm. and you put it outside,
uh-huh.
and you put it inside, and it measures wind speed and all sorts of cool stuff.
Well, that's neat.
Yeah.
That's fun.
I was excited about it.
You like watching the weather?
Actually, I want next year to put up this year sometime. Yeah. I want to put up a wind generator. So, you know, I'm prepared.
Like a wind turbine? Yes. Excuse me?
Exactly.
Right on.
60, 70 feet tall,
mm-hmm.
40-foot blades. No. But I want to put up a small one to try and offset some energy costs.
Right on.
But I want to make sure that we've got the wind speed to support it.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Well, that's cool. Yeah, you guys don't have solar panels or anything, do you?
No, we're not that. We're not that cool.
Not that green.
No, and
those are expensive too.
Right, and I'm going to be honest. It's not as much about being green. It's more about saving money.
Sure, yeah,
and being self-sufficient in the case of the apocalypse. You know, I'm kidding.
Wait, we missed that. Hey, this is the first show we've recorded since the Mayan apocalypse.
Yeah, we did make mention of it in the last episode.
We did, but I mean, this is the first one we've recorded since it actually really didn't happen.
Life has been different since the apocalypse.
It has. It's
very different.
There's been more snow.
A lot more snow.
It finally snowed in Michigan. That was neat. But we're kind of just rambling on here. What you been playing?
What have I been playing?
Yeah.
The most recent game that I played was Settlers of Catan.
No way.
Which I've talked about before. I haven't played it in a while. I haven't played it as recently as we were playing it quite a bit.
Yeah.
It was kind of cool to get back to it. Just because it's been so long since we've played. I mean, when I say so long, I mean a couple months. It's not like it's been forever, but when you're used to playing a game every week,
right?
A couple months feels like a long time. One nice thing about that is, you know, it just feels so fresh when you haven't played a game for a mm-hmm. while,
sure.
even though you like playing it, even when you're playing it all the time. But that was kind of a nice perspective to not have played it for a while and sit back down and roll some dice, flip some cards.
Yeah.
Build some cities. We played our team version and our team won.
Well, that's
so
even better.
Makes it even better.
Even better.
And it ended 2012 on a high note.
Nice. Well, that's good. Right on. So kind of a quiet holiday season for you as far as games go.
That is correct.
Yeah. Good.
How about you? Have you been playing anything spectacular?
Not much, no. We've had so much family stuff going on for the Christmas season, and it's always a busy time for me in my day job, so I had to work a lot of overtime before and after Christmas, so not a lot of free time. But I did want to talk about a game that I backed on Kickstarter that finally arrived. And this is Barons of Tea. And it's a game by Greg Snader. And I think he's in Pennsylvania. So Barons of Tea, but it was kind of an ordeal actually getting it because it shipped right before Christmas, and with the idea of being that it would get to me by Christmas, but the post office wrecked it. like it finally showed up like 2 days later than expected, and the envelope that it was in had been like torn in half and then taped back together by the post office, and it had one of those messages on it saying received in damaged condition. You know how the post office does
that?
Yeah,
I've seen that.
When they mangle something, they stamp it and say, not our fault, we didn't do it.
Right, yeah. Even though you know they did.
Of course they did it.
Because, like, the guy actually shipped the game to you, torn open.
Right, exactly. Right. And why would that happen?
Well, I think that they do that because they can do that at the last post office. Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, this was damaged.
Well, it was ours. You know, I don't know. I didn't know. Mm. Yeah, so not a lot of confidence in the U.S. Postal Service. But at any rate, I got it in the, you know, there was the rule book and the game mat was in there because it uses a mat instead of a board.
Right, right.
And there were some cards, but the cards were just kind of a jumbled up mess. Then none of the game pieces, no dice. It was just a mess. And so, you know, I emailed Greg the same day and said, hey, man, you know, I this isn't your fault. You know, the post office messed it up. But what do you think? And he, to his credit, he was awesome about it. And he right away, the next day, the next morning, because I emailed him in the evening, the next morning he had another whole fresh copy. Well, not a complete copy, but everything that I said was missing, he sent it right straight out to me right away, priority mail, and I had it in just a couple more days. So thanks very much, Greg, for sending that on my way. Haven't had a chance to play it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. It's a game about kind of the battles and the combat, I guess, in the tea trade, you know, back in, what was it, that 1700s, 1800s? I think 1800s. But, you
with
know,
the East India Trading Company?
Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah. Right, yeah. Kind of about shipping your tea across the globe by sea, land and sea. Anyway, so yeah, it looks neat. Looks fun. So I'm looking forward to playing that.
Awesome.
Yeah. I haven't actually played anything, though.
That's understandable. I mean, that happens to me sometimes. Yeah. I mean, I know I've said on the show before, what have you been playing? Nothing.
Yeah, right. I mean, a lot of video games because the few free times that I have had, free moments I have had, it's not like my wife and I've had, you know, a couple hours to sit down together and
right.
sit down and pull out a game and really play it. So it's just kind of been nice to sit down with the PlayStation or something and put on a game for a few minutes. That's about it.
Yeah, no, I do the same thing with my phone since my phone is basically a video game system in of itself.
Yeah, pretty much. Modern phones these days.
Playing the apps.
Yeah. So that's kind of a boring little start for us.
Good. Hey, if you're still listening, we're going to get into some less boring stuff coming up
soon. Well, why don't we go ahead and roll into our Mechanic of the Week if you're ready for that.
I'm always ready.
All right. It's time for the Mechanic of the Week featuring Jason Slingerlin. Take it away, Jason.
This week, I'd like to talk about variable player powers.
Ooh, what is that?
So variable player powers, the idea that different players in the game will have different abilities and things they can do, you know, during the game, like moves they can make, powers they can use that other people don't necessarily have.
All right.
Now, there's different ways to do that. You could have a character that has certain powers and everybody's got a different one. You know, it could be something that rotates.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a role selection game, for instance, sure. where you're this turn on this guy and I can do this, and you know what I mean. So there's a lot of different ways to use it. There's a good deal of games that do use this mechanic.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me because it, for one, I think it makes balancing a game more difficult.
Sure does. Right? I would think, yeah.
Because especially if you've got a game, one of the ones I can think of right off the top of my head is Forbidden Island,
mm-hmm.
Where you get, you know, depending on which card you get for who you are, if you're the navigator or the messenger or the pilot, you get different powers. And they're as fun of a game as it is, the powers are by no means balanced.
Yeah.
So
we've talked about that before.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're playing two players, you can kind of get hosed based on who you draw.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like the idea more of alternating. You know, the idea in a game that I can have a certain power on one turn,
yeah.
and then, you know, it alternates via the turns. So
I'm sorry. So variable player powers, how does this differ from just straight up role selection? I mean, I'm not sure where we're splitting here.
Well, I think I guess to define specifically with role selection, you're saying that in the game you have to choose to be different roles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to change over the course of the game.
Well, I thought Small World, where, and I know you still haven't had a chance to play that. Small World, where every few turns or something, you're going to abandon your race and pick a new race with a new special ability or something.
Right. So I guess role selection and variable player powers are somewhat intertwined together.
Yeah, some overlap there. Or are you thinking of something more like, and we haven't played this, but everybody talks about Battlestar Galactica, where one of the players is a Cylon and is secretly the bad guy. Is that more the thing?
Yeah, I like that. I think that's Battlestar Galactica, I think, is a good example.
Okay.
Where at the beginning of the game, it's predetermined that one person's doing something different. You know what I mean? One person is a different character. Now, I know I kind of just said that,
things change. You like it when things change throughout the game, but...
But I think it's different if one person is different. If you kind of have, like, an odd man out, right? To where they are doing something different than everyone else, and they mm-hmm. have special power that other people don't have.
So we're kind of thinking... Maybe the spirit of what you're thinking about here to talk about is kind of that odd man out idea.
Yeah, I could see that.
Okay.
I think that variable player powers is certainly, you know, one way to do that. But yeah, I mean, there are certain games, we've talked about Mansions of Madness before.
Yeah.
You've played mm-hmm. where one person has to be the person, you know, the guy running the game.
The keeper, kind of the pseudo game master, if not necessarily a game master, they're playing as the bad guys because they're not running everything. I mean, they're kind of 50% playing as the game master, kind of advancing the story, but they are trying to win as the bad guys versus you trying to win as the good guys.
Right. It reminds me of older games like Hero Quest.
Yeah.
Same type of thing. And you know, there's that. Oh gosh, there's the RuneScape. Is that what they're called?
I've heard that before.
Some games. They're these big box games that are. They're. I think they're more aimed at kids, but I could be wrong about that. I know I've had some friends that have had them before. Where you're playing against each other, but I could be wrong. You could just be playing straight up against each other.
Is that like the hex shaped plastic terrain stacks up? Okay, yeah.
I think it's actually pretty cool looking.
Yeah, that looks great. Yeah, I would love to. That's kind of bigger scale, not huge, but you know, bigger scale miniatures combat game that I would love to try sometime. But I don't want to invest the money in buying those big sets, you know. And right. How often would I be able to actually sit down and play that with people? So,
right. Yeah. I guess if we were still kind of talking about variable player powers, another really good example of that would be miniatures games, because when you play those, right, mm-hmm. You've got several people. You've got two players who have people on their team, right? Team,
yeah,
being the term for your war band or whatever you want to call them,
yeah,
and those people. All have different powers. So that works.
So we're just kind of listing games here that feature these things. So what what is it? And we do that sometimes. But what is it about this idea that engages you, that you like, or that you find compelling?
So the variable player power thing, I mean, obviously I'm saying that I like that because I like the fact that it changes, you know, and it can change throughout the game.
Yeah.
On the odd man outside, you guys kind of get a twofer here as the listeners. Instead of only kind of talking semi-good about one mechanic, we'll talk kind of semi-good about two mechanics.
Deal.
Awesome.
Go.
So, odd man out. What I really do like about that is it allows for two very different playing styles. So maybe one person likes being the person when you're playing Mansions of Madness who's running the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe somebody doesn't ever want to do that, you know, but they like that someone else is doing that. And, you know, that way you can have an antagonist and you can still have that team feeling. Alcatraz, the scapegoat.
Yep.
That's another one like that where somebody mm-hmm. keeps getting stuck. Now that can change throughout the game.
Right. The idea of that is that the scapegoat, the odd man out, changes every turn or every couple turns or something.
Right.
Is the idea.
So here's what I think is a challenge, with the odd man out mechanic. As a design, from a designer's standpoint, you're trying to make it so that the game is equally fun for everyone, right? Because no, you don't want it where no one wants to play that character.
Yeah.
Because, oh, no, I got to do this, and I got to run the stupid game.
Right.
But you also have to make sure that it's balanced. So not only does it have to be fun, but it has to function correctly without mm-hmm. feeling stupid.
Yeah.
So I would really like to try in a game, to really try to mm-hmm. have a game where it was everyone against one person, to try and design something that felt that way, but was good. Not that, I mean, the games you mentioned are bad, but we've talked about Alcatraz the Scapegoat and that it wasn't a very positive experience because y'all just kept dumping the scapegoat on the same guy.
Right.
And that was not fun for him.
It was not fun at all. It wasn't fun for any of us.
I think, though, the key difference between that and a Mansions of Madness is there's the Mansions of Madness, you have us versus the bad guy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in the Alcatraz game, you've got everyone's on a team, but let's pick who we want to screw
mm-hmm.
and let them lose, right? So it's not either the good guys win or the bad guy wins. It's either we all win and then you lose, right? So there's one loser. Now, granted, I know that if the good guys win Mansions of Madness, there's one loser, but he's mm-hmm. the bad guy, and that's the point.
That's kind of the point, right?
The game started that way,
right?
But with a game like Alcatraz, I think what you lose in the fun factor is that the game didn't start that way.
Yeah.
The game started and everyone was level, and then we chose Rob to be the loser who's going to lose the game.
Yeah, everybody ganged up on me. Great, I feel really good about myself.
Exactly. Yeah. See, and I mean, I've seen that happen in games with close friends, mm-hmm. and you feel kind of burned about it.
Yeah,
and it's different. Again, it's different if it's an every man for themselves game and, you know, somebody's getting close to winning, like Settlers. If we're playing Settlers all on our own, there's four players.
Yeah.
When somebody starts to get close to 10, the other players are going to try to fight to make you lose. That's just how it is. But when everyone's supposed to be working together and then you have to pick one person, single them out and say, screw you, you're going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know,
yeah,
I think that's the key to what makes it not fun.
Okay, so what game would you make featuring this odd man out idea?
Well, I think from a starting point, you have to have good guys versus bad guy. I think that's at the beginning of the game that needs to be defined.
Yeah,
or even bad guys versus bad guy, but it's the group, it's the mob versus the one person, right?
Yeah.
And as long as that's clearly defined in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
I think that's okay.
The team of superheroes versus the one supervillain.
Right, exactly.
These kind of clear archetypes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it would be like if you were playing Sentinels and one person actively played as the bad guy.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Sure.
Because then you're kind of dueling against them.
Yeah.
Let's go with something really simple.
Yeah.
One player. So you've got a group of people, right?
Yep.
You're going to play a game.
Yep.
One player in the game is the con man, right?
Okay.
Everyone else is honest people.
Okay.
So let's say that you all are you're all patrons of businesses, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you also own your own shop. So you're spending money at different places, right? Like investing in each other's businesses, everyone's trying to make money.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the people is the con man. So they're actually just trying to steal everyone else's money. They're not trying to help you. So they're giving you things that are not going to pan out, right? I mean, it really comes back to that being like an infiltrator type thing, like in BSG.
Okay. So this is odd man out, this guy, the con man who's trying to scam everybody else out of their money. And he's got his own money to deal with. Maybe everybody starts with the same amount of money to start with, and he's trying to get all of the money.
Right.
But and he's going to... Sometimes you got to spend money to make money is kind of the idea.
Right.
Yeah.
So I guess, for say that game ends when your business gets bankrupted, right?
Mm-hmm.
His job is to bankrupt everyone else. But okay, so there's a problem. Because then he's actually... If you're trying to be last man standing, then he actually... has the same goal as everyone else, but just has special powers, which that seems unfair. So that's probably broken. You know, I'm reminded of a really good example. I'm reminded of is a reality TV show I used to watch on ABC. I think it was on ABC. It was actually hosted, I think, originally by Anderson Cooper. He's big and famous now doing other stuff. The game was called The Mole.
Oh, I've heard of that.
So it was a game where the group of people, this group of random people, Survivor style, got put in, and they had to go solve puzzles and do like Survivor style. I'm just saying Survivor style because so many people have seen an easy reference. Yeah, yeah. Survivor style games were in competitions, except for they work together. So the whole plan is to work with each other to succeed. And when you succeed, good things happen. Money gets put in the pot. You win prizes, that kind of stuff, right? But throughout the show, one person is the mole.
Yeah, and who's working to make you fail.
Yes, they work for the producers. But, and this is the problem, they have to sabotage you, but they also have to be on your team, right?
Yeah.
So...
And if you make it obvious, then they're going to vote you out or something like that.
Well, see, so here's how it works. Every on that show, at least, every week, they would have to take a test. And it was 42 questions about the mole.
Hmm.
And whoever had the lowest score would lose. The mole didn't matter. They always stayed on. They were there till the end, right?
Okay.
You could not get rid of them. But the idea was that the more you knew, if you could figure out who the mole was, then you'd be guaranteed, because the questions would always be, was the mole the person who did, and then like four choices, and it was four different things people did, or is the mole male or female, that kind of stuff. So, you know, you could go down that line, and then lowest score, kicked out until the fiery end where somebody has to figure out who the mole is.
Okay.
So
it's like down to the last three people. Two of them are players and one is the mole.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay, that's neat. So you're thinking you could do it as the mole the game.
Here's what I don't want to do, because you know we've talked about this before, and I think that I'm doing this a disservice by doing this. So let's clear this up. We've talked before about secret moves and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I don't want it to be
don't
like
want
that.
That to you know?
So I think that like the con man idea is bad, the mole idea is bad. Glad we talked about him, but but what it really comes back to is at the beginning of the game there has to be a set difference between people.
Yeah.
And it you know one person has to be in charge or has to be the bad guy or has to be doing something different with different goals. Those goals should be out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
That's odd man out. That's not secret moves. That's not variable player powers. So, wow.
This is a tough one.
It's a tough one because, I feel like what we keep running into is we keep running back to things like BSG. But really, you should be focused more on things like Mansions of Madness, where you've got a game. So, I guess, better idea. For a game, let's say you are, gosh, I was trying to think of something a little more fun than just like a generic theme. Let's say you are on an expedition. You're on an expedition into the jungles of South America, and you're trying to get to some Indiana Jones style junk, right?
Okay.
Maybe you're trying to discover crap. I don't know.
Looking for the lost city of gold.
Sure.
There you go.
Sounds good. So all the players are playing as expedition people.
Explorers.
Thank you for that term. That
somehow expedition people.
Expeditioners. So they're playing as that. And the one player is playing as the tribes that are down there.
Okay, so he's not one of the explorers.
Nope.
He's the natives trying to keep the explorers away.
Right.
Okay, got it.
So, it wouldn't even have to be that. Maybe you're like a Greenpeace dude who's trying to stop the people from finding it, so you're sniping them or something. I don't know. That's how that works, right?
Yeah.
So I think this is actually a decent example.
Okay.
I like the idea that you're playing as the people there. I was looking for that
The indigenous peoples.
That's the word I was looking for.
Man, I got all the words today.
He does. The indigenous people. So you're playing as the indigenous people.
Uh-huh.
So at your disposal, you would have all sorts of different things you could do mm-hmm. to try and slow them down and divert them. And, you know, it's a fun expedition game and you're natives, right?
Yeah.
I would say kill them because, I mean, you don't know any better.
Right, yeah.
You know,
right.
Especially if you're uncontacted peoples, as they like to call
especially
them.
Especially if it's set in, you know, the 1800s, where, you know, British colonialism meant kill all the native people and move yourself in.
Right, at least now we're not like that.
Or even take it back to the Spaniards invading South America, you know, and just, yeah. Right. Okay, yeah. So one guy, so it could be a team of players against one player, but the one player has a team of their own, has an army of natives to send against your three explorers.
Exactly, yep. You know, I've never played it, but I've read about it a little bit, the game Ogre, where one person plays as the big powerful ogre, and everyone else is controlling smaller people trying to fight against it.
Okay.
You know, I think that that's a decent suggestion for a game to have a... Mm-hmm. To have one person be the natives, the indigenous people, mm-hmm. you know, and give them powers and such. Yeah, I like that.
And then
that.
You have competing goals because the explorers are trying to get as much gold out of the lost city as they can.
Right.
The natives are just trying to kill the explorers.
Right.
So, yeah. So the explorers are not trying to kill the natives. They're just trying to keep the natives out of their way so they can pillage as much gold as possible.
Right. In fact, I would assume if they could kill one of the natives, like if that was an option...
Yeah,
that somehow would make the game drastically harder after that because
because every time you kill one of the natives, the rest of them get even more riled up and gives the player playing as the natives that many more options or abilities or something.
Right. I mean, I'm thinking this would be a roll and move game, probably.
You think so?
Kidding.
You know, that's not a bad idea though. You know, that could be kind of fun. I could see that on a board where you'd have the explorers would start on one end of the board, and on the other end of the board you'd have this kind of the lost city, you know, or this treasure spot. And the players each of the explorers would have their own character token that they're moving along the board, and it's probably just like a square grid or a hex grid, you know.
Right.
And then the player controlling the natives maybe has six natives he can put out at any time. Or maybe he starts with four natives he can put out and they can move, you know, and they each have a set number of moves that they can do, and they have cards that allow them to do different abilities, you know, jump over a guy or push a guy back, whatever. But if the explorer ever kills a native, then the player playing as the natives, he can, every time one of his guys is killed, he can put two more out.
Right.
Kind of idea. So the more you take out, the larger his force is going to be. And the goal of the explorers is for each of them to get to the treasure spot, pick up a piece of gold, and then get back to the edge of the jungle alive.
Yeah. I like that.
That could be fun.
I think I could... Maybe I'll put a pitch together for that at some point.
Yeah, that could be really cool.
So... Yeah, I feel like we've kind of semi-redeemed ourselves.
I hope so. I hope we did.
After like 20 minutes of rambling, we finally stumbled onto something.
We got somewhere. We accomplished something.
You know what? And that's pretty much our MO.
Yeah. Right.
Blah, blah, blah.
Idea.
Gold.
Yeah. Kind of like the way that's how the game would go too, right? Blah, blah, gold.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
natives
can
set up traps and stuff.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Be all
right,
sorts
yeah.
of fun stuff they could do.
Yeah, and you know, and the explorers could disarm traps, or they could along the way, you know, they could pick up little artifacts and things to get more points, and you know, they can scare off the natives by firing their gun into the air, or they could straight up murder fools, you know.
But again, that would turn out poorly.
It would just make it more difficult. So, you know, and so then also then the explorers have different ways, different strategies that they could adopt, you know. And maybe there's five different explorer characters and it's only a four-player game. And so you're going to have natives versus three explorers, and you have each explorer has different abilities or different bonuses or something. And so the player then chooses which explorer they're going to use based on what strategy they might want to take or something like that, you know.
So what I'm hearing is...
Yeah.
We just managed to tie Admin out back to variable player powers.
Hey, look at that.
Wow. You know what I say to that?
Full circle.
Bance. So, I actually kind of like that. And what might be fun, too, another thought would be you could do it as a team. So it's the three of us against the one person playing the...
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is because then something that I don't see a lot of with those types of games, it's usually random draw, right?
Yeah.
Shuffle up the explorers, hand me one.
Mm-hmm.
It would be cool for you to each know you're going to get one explorer, right? And there's going to be three on the board total.
Right.
And you kind of pick a team based on abilities.
Sure, you set up your team in advance.
And in the rules, it could give you some, you know, hey, if you're just starting out at this game, we suggest mm-hmm. this. If you want to make it harder, try this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, in that the one time that I played Mansions of Madness, it was all the different characters you have to choose from for that. You know, you could just pick one randomly. You shuffle cards and draw one, or you can look at them all and just pick the one you like, or you could work as a group together in advance and say, I think these three or these four people together are going to be the best way for us to succeed at this mission, you know?
Cool.
So, yeah, so you could have that option if you wanted to, absolutely.
All right. So, I think now it's time for practicing the pitch.
Hey.
You're going to pitch a game, and I hear you've got some other stuff to talk about.
Well, yeah. I kind of had, okay, so I've been debating on how to come at this on the show, you know, and how to really introduce this idea. And I guess the best thing to do is just kind of talk about the process of me getting to where I am now, right? I was looking at a picture online one day of a guy who had posted a picture of his prototype, and he had cards printed for his prototype, and they were cut crooked. Yeah, so that, you know, he had his cards that were, your card has a border around it, you know, so let's say there's a black border around the card, and you're supposed to, the machine's supposed to cut the card around the spaces so the border's on the card, but for whatever reason, it got set wrong in the cutter, or it's printed wrong offset, and so the cutter cut it so that what should have been the cut point was right down the middle of the card. So,
whoops.
In order to make a complete card, he would have had to put two cards next to each other, you know, and join the image together all in one.
Right.
And I don't remember who it was who'd posted that picture where I'd seen that now, you know. But, you know, and the kind of the point of that posting that picture online was to say, gosh, this kind of sucks.
Right.
I guess I got to redo all those. And I thought, well, what if that was intentional?
Okay.
What if he'd done that on purpose?
Bad printing on purpose. I'm in.
Yeah, well, but, you know, you take. So this got me thinking to say that, well, what if the way that you play a card is not to play one card, but to play two cards, and then to join those two cards together, put them next to each other to make a complete image.
Okay.
Okay. So each card that you hold in your hand, that single card, actually has two different halves printed on it.
Right.
Okay. So the right half of the card and the left half of the card, those two are for two entirely separate cards. And then the only way to actually play a card is to put two cards down and put another one next to it to make a complete image, you know?
Right.
Make a complete full power or ability or whatever.
So just to interject here, so if you're playing one card, uh-huh. which is actually two cards combined.
Yeah.
It's like you're playing pieces of four possible cards, right?
Yeah. You've got four pieces out there, but you're only going to be able to use two of those pieces.
And so two are kind of wasted.
That's the idea, right. Yeah.
So it allows decision making for what you want to play.
Right. So this is what I started thinking about. Thinking, well, wait a minute. If every card has two powers or two features on it, and you got to put down, every time you put down one of those cards to play, you're only going to be able to use one of those two features. The other one you have to throw away.
But to use it, you have to match it with another card?
With another card,
so right. It would kind of be like a power and an activator you'd be putting together, right?
Exactly,
so
the
one card would say, like, +5, and the other one would say, like, mojo juice, and then you'd push them together, and now you've got plus five mojo juice.
Exactly, right, yeah. Or if we're thinking about this in terms of some kind of a combat thing, you would say, you know, I have a card that the right half is an attack, and the left half is a defense. Put those together, and on my turn, I can both attack and defend. But if my opponent puts down two cards that are both attacks, then he's going to attack me twice. I get one attack on him, so I'm going to hit him once, and I have one defense. But he's attacking me twice, so I can defend against one of those, but he's also going to hit me once.
Right.
You know? But if I had put down two defenses, then I would have resisted all damage. So it's this idea of making a decision on how you're going to use a card, how you're going to use these things. And by making one choice, you're forfeiting another choice, is kind of the idea.
Right. That's cool. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and I thought, boy, that sounds really versatile to me, you know?
Oh, like as in to say, gosh, which theme should I pick to do this, or what design should I try and attach this to?
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of options.
Yeah, right. There's a lot of different ways I think you could put that into a lot of different styles of games, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Thinking about that, I thought, well, gosh, I should try and come up with a game to kind of feature this, because this could be a kind of a really neat system, you know, we could spread across a lot of different stuff. So chewing on, and I won't go through my entire development process and where I got to where I am right now, but the game that I want to pitch tonight here is using this kind of this, I'm calling it the OSC, the offset card system, the OSC system.
Sounds fancy pants. I like it.
It's a branding. You know, it's all about branding, you know?
Branding.
Right. So the game that I want to pitch here is called Splitters.
Splitters.
Splitters. Right. Okay. Which is kind of, you know, keys into that idea of your everything you do is split in half, you know. Marketing, branding, yeah. So Splitters, okay. It's set in a steampunk world, all right, because steampunk is fun.
I like steampunk. Yeah. I'm a fan of steampunk.
We like steampunk, right? So it's in the steampunk world, okay, and it's a 2-player card game,
okay?
Card game only. And there's going to be like a board on the table for some scoring, to help you with some scoring. And so each of the players they're called splitters. Each of the players is a splitter, and these splitters, they're basically computer hackers, but in like on a steampunk computer.
Did you just say steampunk computer hackers?
Yeah.
Not like steampunk people trying to hack real computers, like trying to hack steampunk computers,
steam powered computers. Right. Have you ever heard of the Difference Engine?
Yes.
Or the Analytical Engine.
Yes.
Yeah, these are two things developed by Charles Babbage back in the 1800s. And it was like the first step towards modern computers. This guy said, hey, I could use gears and levers and cranks and things and wooden pegs to make a computer, to put a command into a mechanical thing, turn a crank, and by turning gears, this elaborate machine will crunch these numbers. Because math is, it's all, you know, it's 1 + 2 = 3, you know, it's a very clean, clear process, math. And he said, by building this difference engine, I can do complex tables, mathematical tables, just by putting some stuff in, turning a crank a certain number of times, and then ending up with a result. And it was all mechanical. And the next step after that, I read up on this stuff. The British government gave him a bunch of money to do this, and he failed miserably at it because he just was so excited about the idea that he was doing a bad job producing the actual machine. And then he said, well, I'm gonna change this into an analytical engine. I don't want to just do this difference engine. I want to do an analytical engine. And it was even more complex. He just kept getting more and more complicated machine without even finishing the old one, you know. But in this next step, he had a system where you could program it, you know, there was like programming language built into this machine by putting in punch cards and wooden pegs into holes. There was even a system of memory where you could store, you could make the analytical engine basically save your game, essentially. It's incredibly complex and awesome stuff.
Wow.
He even had a printer. This thing would make the analytical engine, he had designed a printer to print out these punch cards to draw like graphs, like line graphs and stuff for him based on the numbers. Incredibly amazing stuff. Basically your early version of mechanical Excel, you know? It's super cool. Anyway.
Dude, I mean, that's real life too.
Oh yeah,
that really actually happened. That's not, imagine if he had been in a steampunk world.
Yeah, right. So the idea here is you're splitters, and what you do is there are these massively complex difference engines in this world, and rather than turning that crank by hand, they have that crank turning by steam power, so they can go really fast and process all these numbers real fast.
Right.
With computing comes hacking, right? And so the splitters, what they do is they come into these engines, these difference engines, and they start literally splitting the flow of steam, changing, adding fittings and pipes and things to change the flow of steam, to hack these difference engines to change the results, to come up with things that they want, okay? And it's almost like a competition between hackers, between splitters, to try and achieve some kind of goal. Okay. Cool. So the game is based around this idea. So you and the other player are each, you're each splitters, these steampunk hackers, who are competing to get to, I'm thinking like 10 points. Okay. And the points would be represented on this little game board, be like light bulbs, you know, like old school, yeah. 1400 or whatever, it's steampunk style, light bulbs. Okay. And you would have a little piece that you use to track those points. I got my notes here. Okay. So, but there's only so much steam pressure available, and every time you split something, every time you hack the system, you're changing the flow of steam, you're changing the available pressure. And so the more hacks you put in, more splits you put in, the weaker everything gets, and you're not going to be able to succeed. And so the game, another feature of the game is that you're going to be limited to how many splits you can do. And a split is represented by putting two cards down on the table to do some kind of power, right?
That makes sense.
Okay, so let's talk about the cards. Every card has two halves, right?
Right.
Okay. One half is a point value. The other half is some kind of an ability or a power or the result of your split.
Right.
Okay.
What you're trying to do with your split.
Yeah. And this is represented by card text that allows you to affect the opponent or help yourself out. So you can choose, let's say, your goal is to get 10 points, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I could put down, I have two cards in my hand. Each of them has their left side has 3 points. So I could put down those two cards with the 2 3-pointers next to each other right away. I have 6 points. I move my score tracker up to 6. Okay.
Sounds like a fast game.
Okay. But, those two powers that are on either sides of those cards, they don't do anything, right? They're lost.
Right. Yep.
Right. Okay. But then it's your turn then. All you need to do is you need to play two cards, ignoring the point values, you could play two cards, one using your power and one using your point value. Connect those two together. Okay. Mm-hmm. And your point value might be worth 2 or 3. Okay. And so you put that down, and then, but your other power says force the player to remove one card from the table or to remove one split from the table.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and it might just say one card, period. Okay.
So the other card stays there ineffectual.
Well, the other card goes away because you can't have one card alone.
Okay.
You know, so you'd have one card. I have my two cards down, my one split in place. Your power says your opponent has to lose one card. So you make me take one card away. The other card is useless. It's not connected to anything else. So it has to go away too. And so my score goes back down to 0, and you have 3 points because you have one card out there. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think okay, I got it. Right. Yeah.
Now,
wait. You said two cards you put together.
Yep.
Plus 3 is now a 6.
Right.
You take one card away, the other card doesn't go away well?
It's not in play anymore because you have to keep these points out there in play at all
times.
So now
you're at 0 points.
I'm back to 0, and you're at 3.
I'm at 3. You're at 0, I'm at 3. Now I got it. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
You used 3 like 3 times in a row, and I got confused.
Sorry about that. Yeah. Yeah, so you're now at 3 points, and I'm at 0 because you took away all 6 of my by killing 3 of my points. You also killed the other 3 of my points because you basically sabotaged or you destroyed my split.
So that would give you the ability then, if you were doing things like remove one card,
mm-hmm.
that would give you the ability, in theory, to have cards that could work as a half split. Or have an effect when they were half split.
Yeah.
So when that split breaks, they're going to do something. So that way, when a card says, tell your opponent they have to get rid of a card,
mm-hmm.
your opponent might be able to sneaky, right? Like, oh, yeah. I'll get rid of this one. Oh, that means this one does this.
Yeah, 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 so, exactly. And you might be able to at some point, you might be able to put a third card down onto that split and end up by playing a third card onto that original split, having two powers in play across 3 cards. And then if you lose one card, then, you know, if you pull out the middle one, those two slide together. Or if you pull off one off the side, then you still have the original split or whatever, okay?
Okay, okay. So you could chain splits.
You could potentially chain splits if you have a power that allows you to do that.
Right.
Right. Okay. So you're with me so far?
Totally with you, yep.
Okay. But I said, you know, there's only a limited number of splits you can do. Correct. Otherwise, you run out of pressure and you're going to...
Which makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. So... The next feature of the game is that each player only has 10 cards available to them at any time. And that is across both their hand and cards in play.
And when you say 10 cards, you mean 10 splits or 10 cards?
10 cards, not splits. Because a split is a pair.
So five splits,
five 10 splits. Cards. Yeah, right.
Well, any combination thereof, because you said with their hand or the table.
Exactly, yeah. All right? So and if they don't like the cards that they have in their hand or on their table, the only way for them to get new cards is to discard something old.
Okay.
Okay. So if it's their turn and they don't have anything in their hand that they want to use, they can discard one card from their hand and pick one up off the deck. Or they can destroy one of their splits and put those in discard and take however many cards there are back for that. Okay?
Okay.
But cumulative between cards and playing cards in your hand, you're limited to 10 total. Because you can only have that many things going on with a difference engine before the whole thing falls apart. So you're featuring in this hand management then also. But, you know, there might also be a special power that says, actually, you can have a total of 11 cards in play as long as this split is available to you.
Okay.
You know, as long as you've made this hack. So by changing these different powers, you can manipulate these things. You can either manipulate the available splits on your table in front of you. You can destroy or sabotage your opponent's splits. You can change the number of cards you have available to you. You can maybe even change the number of cards you can play on a given turn or something like that. And as long as that split is in play and in effect, it changes the way your hand is played and maybe how your opponent's hand is played. And so the point, again, is to get a cumulative total of 10 points. And so you're trying to, and also sometimes you might be able to say when a split is in there, you get a hard point that cannot be removed, you know, and then you can move your token there and you know for sure my score is never going to get any lower than that. Because, I mean, potentially the scores could go up and down forever and never get anywhere.
Right.
So at some point you need to get some hard stuff coded in there.
Right, right.
And that's balancing that would need to be worked out.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And I think that's basically, that's kind of the core idea there, putting two cards together to basically make one thing. Just general function here, every turn you have two actions. Okay, so, and that one action is to put a card down or to discard a card and draw another one. So on your first turn of the game, you can choose to either put down two cards because you have two actions, or you can use your two actions to discard two and take two more from the deck. And everybody's drawing from the same deck.
Okay.
Okay. So this is the idea. And then as you get into the game, you can split those actions. Maybe I can put down a card, a one card to add on to the split that's already in place to make a second split and use my other action to discard something, you know, that kind of stuff. So two actions. And then you might, if you put down one split that by putting that down, it might say you actually now have an extra action to use every turn as long as the split is in play.
So the split that you're, when you put a split down, does that count as two actions because it's two cards?
It counts as two actions because it's two cards going down.
Okay, so not much you're doing on any given turn.
Yeah, but the idea is that it's meant to be kind of you know, I don't want it to be a really long game, and I want it to, you know, like Dominion, when you get into Dominion, you know what you're doing. That game can play real fast.
Oh, yeah.
You know, real speedy. And I want it to kind of have that same kind of pep, that same kind of, you know, easy. Let's go. Let me throw those two down. Go. And your turn. Okay, now you're done. Okay, now I'm going to throw my two down. Good. You know, right. I don't want it to be about speed, and I want to force speed into it. But I want to make the option of you know, a forward momentum good, you know.
Right. Well, one of the issues, obviously, you're going to run into is, unlike Dominion, I care about what you have in play. Like with Dominion, that's I true. Watch you play your hand, but really, unless you tell me to discard cards or to draw cards or do something,
yeah,
it doesn't really matter to me what you're doing. I mean, I want to pay attention, like, oh, he just bought two more duchies. Okay.
That's true.
Jerk. Yeah. But with this, you're going to want to be reflecting on what your opponent has, right? Because I'm assuming my splits could affect you.
Yeah.
And if not, your splits are what win you the game. So,
yeah.
Cool. You know, one thing that I think could be fun, because you've got this board here, right, that you're going to use for score tracking.
Yeah.
What if the board had, like, the difference engine on it, right?
Okay.
Like, it was a big thing of the difference engine. Mm-hmm. And yet at the top, you had the light bulbs that would light, right, on each side.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you use your little score tracker on those. And then you take the rest of the board and use it kind of like Lost Cities, right, where you're kind of organizing your splits with it. And you could use it to have, so I guess what you're telling me, let me just make sure I understand before I go here. You're telling me that my splits, like, what's the purpose of my splits? Just to win me the game and to give me special powers, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess what I was thinking was, what if you had it so that there were also some global things I could affect with my splits, right? Like, whenever there are these, you know, based on the number of splits I have or the type of splits I have, right? Like, what if I have a split that doesn't do anything specifically for me and instead activates something on the difference engine? So now that's a global effect that could say everyone can have two extra cards or two extra actions. And then you're using some sort of... Am I making sense or are you losing me?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I feel like if there were more players involved, that would make more sense.
Okay.
But with only two players, I'm not sure. Because something global like that, between just two people, I don't know.
I guess what I'm thinking is you could use it to your advantage. Maybe if you had specific types of splits and it gives a bonus to this type of split, you know, like a plus one or something, if you had that. Or maybe you could lock it into a place that's like points cannot be earned at this point. Or you could make it so that hard-coded points could go away. That kind of thing. So basically you have to give up what you're doing to force actions on the machine specifically to try and affect the other player. So I guess the way I would picture it is it could be set actions that were already out there. Like maybe that's how you hard code a point. Maybe you do certain things to the machine to hard code yourself a point, right? So, but then there's a way you could do things in the machine to unhard code a point for your opponent and vice versa. That type of thing. I do have a question though about the way the cards line up. Yeah. So any two cards can line up against one another?
Or? Yeah, that's the idea.
Okay.
Are you thinking of like, you know, color coding or something?
Well, I was thinking of some sort of limiting factor with, just because I think that's good. Mm-hmm. It can't be too much. It can't be too diverse to where it's difficult. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or maybe you could have like an ideal fit and a non-ideal fit. Like, so like you put two cards together. And if it's an ideal fit, meaning it's matched, you're going to get something better than if it wasn't. So I think if you're going to go with steampunk, a really easy thing would be like the brass pipe, like brass fitting to brass fitting or
sure, like metals,
wood to
yeah.
wood.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So that type of thing.
Okay. That's not a bad idea, too. Yeah.
And another thing you could do with that, then, those could be more solid or weaker, depending, so they could be harder to get rid of. So if you can make a good brass fit to brass fit, and you can start chaining off that.
Or maybe that's how you get those points to be hard-coded in there. That if you earn points by making splits using unlike materials, then those points might be lost. But if you can make those points with using like materials, brass to brass, wood to wood, steel to steel, whatever... Then any points earned with that are hard-coded in. And even after the split is lost, you would still... Maybe that's a simple way to make them hard-coded.
Right. Yeah.
That's... And then you could have six different materials, and you can still make your connections to your splits, but it adds another step of saying that, you know, if you can fit that in there, that would be more solid, a more bigger guarantee for you.
Right. I still do think that finding some way to build in something that allows you to program the machine specifically.
Yeah. Okay. How about this? Let's say so there's this track of 10 points along the board, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And each player might have their point thing at any point along that board, and it could change up and down the points.
Right.
Okay. Once both players have passed a certain threshold, then that new thing happens. So, you know, when both players have 2 points or more, then the difference engine has been hacked to a point where everybody gets three actions per turn now.
Oh yeah, I like that.
And then when you get both players have at least 4 points, then you know, then you lose that third turn, but you can now chain three cards together instead of only chaining two cards together.
Yeah, yeah. Something you could even do to make it a little more flexible would be when a certain point total is hit.
Oh, sure.
And then say, like, for instance, this would be great. Like, when you hit 7 points, something great happens, right? Like, big advantage to the player with less points.
Okay.
Right? So, that if I'm schooling you, I'm at, like, four. I mean, I'm at, like, six, and you've got 1 point.
Yeah.
I just granted you an advantage, right?
When you get that seventh point to get a cumulative total of 8 between the two players, then all of a sudden the guy in last place is going to get a big surge.
Exactly.
That's a cool idea.
You know, yeah. Because that you got to be very strategic, obviously, with that.
Right.
I don't want to get too far ahead, which would make sense because, you know, you're making all these changes to this big machine.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to get too far like crazy without knowing what the other guy's doing, because you could break the whole machine.
Right.
You know?
And then every time you play, depending on how those points advance, you might not hit certain things. You know, or you know, maybe that 8 point threshold only hits if it's at exactly 8 points. So if somebody jumps from, if I have one and you have six, and you jump from, don't, if you jump from 6 to 8 points,
right,
we never hit eight total, and so that thing never happened.
Right. I mean, you could even have one where it's like, for like that, if I hit, if the first person hits 7 points and the other person has less than two, mm-hmm. that other hacker automatically gets boom. 2 points or something like that.
Okay.
Hard-coded.
Yeah.
You know, so...
yeah, and then that would make it easy to keep track of that by... That's all relative to the position of your score markers.
Exactly.
I like that a lot. Yeah,
that would be fun. Because then it really feels like you're dueling.
Yeah, right. And that your actions have consequences.
Exactly. Because I guess that was one of the things that I felt like, you know, you're putting these things together, but they're not really...
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, it's there, it's gone. It's there, it's gone. Mm-hmm. I'm giving myself these arbitrary bonuses that are just going away.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're doing something like that, there's consequences mm-hmm. to that. So,
right. And so then you could also have a power that immediately, if you can put that down there, then it would immediately jump that special action to whatever place on the board, regardless of the current point value or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you could, I mean, there are different ways you could use it. I mean, you could have on the board, you could have just slots mm-hmm. for the special actions that were happening. You could have markers that go on those,
mm-hmm.
or you could just track it with numbers somehow. I mean, there's ways you could do it, but that would be cool, and that would be,
I think,
be very visual looking at it.
I think each player would need two tokens to track score, mm-hmm. one to represent the hard-coded points and one to represent the temporary points.
Yep.
You know, and then you would need a fifth token to represent, to put on whatever special global condition is happening at any given time.
Right.
To identify that. Okay. Boy, I like that. I think that would fit real well. I think it would fit real well.
I think that'd be fun. Uh-huh. And I still would advocate for having the fittings, like having the solid fittings to not.
Yeah, I like that.
Only because, it just makes it more dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idea that you can match any two cards is awesome, mm-hmm. but it could also be really easy to break that system very quickly. Unless matching two cards that weren't like wood and brass isn't going to give you a very good fit.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So,
okay, I like that. So anyway, so there you go, splitters. That's the idea with the OSC, the offset card system, that I've got bounced around in my head here. And what I'd really like to do is, you know, I think it's so versatile that I'd like to, you know, kind of keep thinking about other ways to come at this, you know?
Yeah, that, you know, here's the thought.
Yeah.
What if I pitch a game on the next show that fits into this system?
Okay.
It won't be about people hacking steampunk machines. It'll be about something else. In fact, I'll try and do something very different.
Okay.
But see if I can stick with the same system.
Okay.
Being the cards.
Yeah.
The cards. Yeah, and I think that, I think I have an idea. So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We can try and use kind of like some of the same features.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
I probably could. You're thinking for the board. It would not be a full size board.
Oh, no. Just something small. You know, so it's something. You know, it wouldn't be the size of a card, but maybe, you know, it's the kind of thing. The idea is that this would be very compactable, very, you know, very small container, easy to carry around with you. Quick playing is my hope.
Right. So yeah. I mean, you'd be maybe 8-inch by 8-inch
something
board
like that.
Maximum,
yeah, real simple.
Like
yeah,
that.
I'm thinking maybe kind of long and thin, like Lost Cities, but not that big.
My idea would probably need to be a little different than that, but small board nonetheless. I'll give that a try.
Yeah, okay.
Because I like the games that come with the little boards. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it
so,
is nice, yeah.
Because you feel like you're getting a board game, but it's still compact. So
yeah.
You're getting a board game, but you don't have to, like, you know, put it in your backpack. And,
right, you don't need this big Milton Bradley space. Box.
Kind of. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so I'll do that. Next week, I will hopefully pitch a game that's awesome.
Fantastic. I'm excited about this.
Sweet.
Yeah, no, but I really think splitters is cool. And I that is most definitely going to be my next prototype for sure, guaranteed. I'm going to move forward with that.
Excellent.
I haven't been this excited about a project since I first started really putting some effort into making damsels something playable.
Cool.
You know, and I played with that tower game prototype, and I did some work with the Slenderman game, and I did some work with the Frankenstein's Legacy game, but this one I think I really want to push forward on, because it had those features that I like. You know, it's a simple card game, simple mechanics, compact, not too much complexity, not too many pieces to keep track of. That kind of stuff really is really what I get excited about. So yeah.
All right.
Cool. I think we should move on, because we got a long episode here.
Whoa.
Yeah, we should move on. We have some questions, some Twitter questions or website comments or something.
Yeah, we've got a quick question here. We did get while we were chatting here, I did see that we got a question in from our friend Flip Flory.
Yeah,
from
Flip
the Table podcast. And he just wanted to know if there was any games that we played with our family over the holidays that we wouldn't normally play. He played Lupin Louie, which I have not played before. Yes, actually, Flip, I did. I played Apples to Apples, and it was just as not fun as I remember it being.
Yeah, you hate that game.
Well, it just, because I'm somebody who likes to strategize.
Yeah, and you can't.
No, and I mean, I know all the people we played with really well.
Yeah.
And yet still they were making choices that was like, nobody really wanted to play. They said, let's play this game. And then nobody really wanted to play. And
yeah.
So, and then we just quit after a little while. And I was excited because one of my cousins-in-law was like, I can't play this game anymore. And I was like, you know what? Neither can I. Yeah. So we quit.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't play anything at all. Like I said before, Christmas is always difficult for me because I have so much work I have to do around the holidays. Year end in the mortgage banking industry in which I work is rough. It's rough.
It is.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, nothing for me. I have a Twitter question here from Brian Fisher. He says, paper or plastic? I want to say paper because that's the socially and environmentally friendly thing to do, but plastic has handles.
I always get plastic.
Yeah.
I don't, and I have a bunch of those green bags at home to use, and I never take them to the store.
No, we got a bunch of those too, but no, never use those. I'm a little ashamed of myself, but you know, that's the way it goes. Sorry, buddy.
I'm sure he's really sad.
Yeah. Did you have another one? I have another one here.
Yeah, go ahead with the one you have.
Okay, this is from Brian LeBurge. Brian says, isn't that freelance writer Brian LeBurge so handsome? We should probably all go buy his books. You're absolutely right, Brian. He's incredibly handsome, and we should all go buy his books. His website is stuffershack.com, StuffershaK.com. He's an RPG freelance writer. He's got some cool stuff. I think his main product is his Midgard Bestiary for D&D 4th Ed. Check it out, Brian LeBurge. And on Twitter, he is at Brian LeBurge, BrianLiberge. Brian's a good dude.
Yeah, I got to play a game with him at Gen Con of Dread, and he's a fantastic role player and a funny guy.
Yeah, so there you go.
I have one last thing. Okay, we got a comment here from Andy Lennox. And Andy wanted to let us know, our episode Dirty Money and Standing Line, we talked about money in games.
Yeah.
And he just wanted to let us know he enjoyed the episode, but our discussion on money seems to miss a pretty big point, and that is that money is the same as any resource in any game. Money is just one possible theme tacked onto the resource. You mentioned mana and Magic, the Gathering, and differentiated it from money in Dominion, which is also just represents the ability to produce resources within the game. And then he also said that I think that you are relating mechanics to one another that aren't mechanically related at all and are just related in theme. The example of money that is produced for a turn and goes away as a resource is mechanically identical to action points. He's right there. That is a good point.
Yeah, he is absolutely right.
But money that stays in your possession throughout the game and acts as a win condition is mechanically indistinguishable from points in any other game, meaning win points.
Mm-hmm.
But our segment did treat that as two different things, and he just wanted us to know that he thought that, and that's a good point.
Yeah,
that's a very it's a very clear, concise point, and I appreciate your feedback, Andy.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much for doing it.
Yeah.
So yeah.
All right. Well, I think that wraps us up for tonight, huh?
I think so.
Okay. Thanks everybody who wrote in to us. Keep those comments coming. Thanks again for listening to our show, episode 32. This is our first episode of 2013. Am I forgetting anything?
No, I can't concentrate because of this music.
Yeah, that will be layered in after we record this.
Don't break the fourth wall.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Building the Game. You can check out our website, which is buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can also send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerland. I am @poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. And you can, you know, you can just send us gifts if you want. That's always cool. I'm down with that. And that wraps us up. So thanks for listening, and have a wonderful, wonderful Happy New Year, guys.
See you guys.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game...
Pants!